Tomorrow is both National Hunting and Fishing Day and National Public Lands Day. Both are important to us being Togiak National Wildlife Refuge and the other 15 refuges across Alaska, as well as the many national parks. It's not uncommon for both to happen on the same day, though once in a while there's a week's difference. This year is an overlap year, and it makes me sad. The reason I say that is usually Togiak Refuge has an open house, with activities and things to learn and food, in celebration of these 2 days. But, in the spirit of the endless outhouse that 2020 has been for many, we'll not be having it this year, due to concerns for COVID. I'll tell you right now, as the coordinator for this event for the refuge, when things finally clear up and get back to normal, whenever that might be, I just might put together an open house to celebrate both, even if it's not even remotely close to the actual dates and irrespective of the season or weather. I enjoy visiting with the public and seeing people have fun and learn about a great many outdoor topics. No, the lid on things, for the moment, is just temporary. That aside, let's talk about the 2 reasons for the celebration in the first place. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. I sometimes get folks on our Facebook page who scoff at or question the compatibility of refuges with hunting. I've really seen it a bunch this year on the National U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Facebook page. Under our current presidential administration, a lot of refuge lands have been newly opened for hunting opportunities, and there has been a lot of negative comments from people about this happening, which is sad. I believe they are confusing refuges with a wildlife preserve or some such thing. In fact, hunting is compatible to the point of, it's in writing. Refuges, where the needs and concerns of wildlife are met, are managed to allow public use. And there are 6 particular uses that have been identified: hunting, fishing, wildlife observation, photography, environmental education, and interpretation. These were established to ensure that these uses receive enhanced consideration under general public uses in the refuge system. Put another way, these are the things we want happening on refuges. In Alaska, hunting and fishing receive even more consideration, in a manner of speaking, because not only is hunting an identified use, but Alaska refuges are also managed with an eye towards subsistence use. And the 2 biggest subsistence uses of our wildlife resources are those 2, hunting and fishing. In light of that, a day to celebrate fishing and hunting seems like a remarkably good idea. A lot of people across our nation make use of refuges. We just happen to live in a corner of the world where hunting and fishing are at the forefront of those uses. Some examples of others who use refuges might include mountain bikers, hikers, geocachers, rafters, ATV riders, snorkelers, bird watchers, backpackers, berry pickers, mushroom pickers, wildlife photographers, and kids of all shapes, sizes, and ages. To some degree, we have some of those here as well, but the signature activities remain, indisputably, hunting critters and catching fish. For those that might have a dim view of hunters, in particular, and not that it's likely much of an issue around here, the truth is that hunters are amongst the most fervent of conservationists. Theodore Roosevelt, the founder of the National Wildlife Refuge System, is memorialized for what he did for conservation, and outdoors men and women also remember that he was also a dedicated, passionate hunter. In a civilized and cultivated country, wild animals only continue to exist at all when preserved by sportsmen. The excellent people who protest against all hunting and consider sportsmen as enemies of wildlife are ignorant of the fact that in reality the genuine sportsman is by all odds the most important factor in keeping the larger and more valuable wild creatures from total extermination. That's a direct quote from our former 26th president, and his words still ring just as true today. I'll grant you, hunters have also had a hand in some bad stuff, before we figured out what was what, and that likely still burns some in the hearts of those who oppose hunting. The passenger pigeon comes to mind, and the bison almost followed it out the door. In my home state of Kansas, in my youth, white-tailed deer were not very numerous, and were pretty much non-existent through a lot of the early 1900s. The same was true of the beaver. Today's generation of Kansans probably think that sounds absurd, because the state is now overrun with both species. Again, Solid management and the efforts of hunters and anglers brought things back and helped to properly manage both species now. Some folks get rankled by game laws, but having protections in place makes sure we're going to have a future for hunting. Before the late 1800s, there really weren't any sorts of things. Pressure on a number of species took a heavy toll on wildlife resources, such as with wolves and bears, at least in the lower 48, and deer, bison, and a number of bird species. The whole refuge system came about due to heavy pressure on large shorebirds along the eastern seaboard. As we moved into the 1900s, enlightened individuals realized that yes, you can totally deplete a species, and things started to turn. Important laws were signed into being that had an impact on growing numbers for animals that were dwindling in number, laws like the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918, the Migratory Bird Hunting and Conservation Stamp Act of 1934, the Federal Aid and Wildlife Restoration Act of 1937, and the Federal Aid and Sport Fish Restoration Act of 1950. In fact, the laws passed across the last century laid the foundation for what's called the North American Model for Wildlife Conservation. There are seven facets to this model, facets that make it distinct from anything else in the world today. First, wildlife is recognized as a public resource, irrespective of the land or water where wildlife is found. Government agencies at various levels have a role in managing that resource on behalf of all citizens and to provide for long-term sustainability of populations. Next, game markets are no more. This was a big part of the declines and sometimes eliminations of so many species in the 1800s, such as market hunting for feathers. Making it illegal to buy and sell meat and parts of game and non-game species removed a huge threat to those species. There are still some markets, such as for fur bearers, but that continues as a regulated activity. Third, wildlife is allocated by law. This refers to legal things, such as seasons, bag limits, and license requirements. Fourth, wildlife can only be harvested for legitimate uses. Wanton waste is not allowed. Fifth, wildlife species are considered an international resource. For example, many types of migratory birds cross national boundaries, so treaties are set up to cover those ranges. Sixth, science is the backbone by which decisions are made. Locally, this is aided by things like the annual waterfowl survey or the requirement to turn in hunt reports. These are things we do around here to help the science happen. And the last facet is that hunting is for all. Government agencies allocate access to wildlife without regard to things such as wealth, prestige, or land ownership. So that's where we're at with regards to wildlife and management in our country. Let's go back now to tying that to anglers and hunters, with some examples of how that's done. One example is the federal duck stamp. Through the duck stamp, hunters help protect and restore habitat for migratory waterfowl and other birds and wildlife. The stamp has a much longer formal name, the Federal Migratory Bird Hunting and Conservation Stamp, in case you're wondering. It's a required thing for waterfowl hunting across most of the nation. I say most because those of us across rural Alaska are exempt during the spring and summer season, though we do need it for the fall statewide season. Also, it's a great value. For every dollar spent on duck stamps, 98 cents goes directly to purchase or enhance habitat. There's also the Federal Aid and Wildlife Restoration Act, though it's more commonly called the Pittman-Robertson Act, for the legislators who authored it. With this piece of legislation, hunters fund a wide range of conservation programs. The act uses revenue from an excise tax on firearms, ammunition, archery equipment, and other related items to generate revenues to pay for state wildlife agency projects, hunter education programs, and the operation of archery and shooting ranges, to name just a few things. It's a huge thing with regards to conservation efforts, and it's hunters that are picking up the tab. Then there's that other reason for the day of celebration, which I probably don't talk about enough and probably should talk about more. National Public Lands Day, which is also tomorrow. The reason I should talk about it more is that Togiak Refuge is one of the biggest blocks of public land in the nation at almost 5 million acres. The reason I don't, probably, is because a lot of what's tied to the day is getting people out actually on public lands and doing things to help clean or enhance those lands. And that's just not really a part of our reality here. Access can be difficult, and across large portions, there's just not a lot to clean or enhance. That's not true for a lot of public lands with easier access, where the heroic efforts of so many help to keep those lands clean and pristine, and in some cases make them better through other means. I will say that I've read that COVID is likely going to impact a lot of those efforts this year. In the same way, it's putting the kibosh on our open house. Public lands are many things to many people. For me, a couple of weeks ago, it was looking across so much rugged wilderness from a mountain plateau, while hoping to get a glimpse of a bear or a moose. For others, it might be a hike on a wooded trail, a fish rising to the fly on a high alpine lake, a glimpse of wild creatures close to an urban setting, or sitting on a bench and watching the colors of the setting sun dance on the waters of a river. Whatever the outlet, there is no denying the immeasurable value of the public lands we have access. They are definitely something to celebrate. One more time, no open house this year. For that, I am sorry. I will try very hard to make it up as soon as I am green-lighted to do so. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.